Some crimes are never forgotten. Others are lost to history. Those are the ones we focus on in Crimes of the Centuries, a history meets true crime podcast revisiting murders, trials, and frauds that once dominated headlines. I'm Amber Hunt, your host and a Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist. If you like true crime that feels both cinematic and historical, find Crimes of the Centuries wherever you get your podcasts.
Everybody, welcome into another episode of Investing in Real Estate. I'm Clayton Morris. Thank you so much for downloading the podcast, and I'm super excited today to have one of our case study episodes where we talk to an investor who doesn't have a boatload of properties under his or her belt, but certainly has a few and certainly has gone through a journey to get there. And I think it's always beneficial for our audience to hear some of those early struggles, even if you're just getting one, two, three properties under your belt. What was that like? Especially if it's near history or it's new history for someone. And, you know, a lot of times older investors maybe have 15, 30, 100 properties and they started doing it 15 years ago. It can be a distant memory. But for Alvin Pereira, he is, I would say, a fairly new investor. And he is joining us on the show today from Orlando, Florida. Alvin, great to have you on the show.
Hey, thanks for having me. It's pretty awesome. So congrats on doing it.
Oh, absolutely. It's a thrill for us to have you on here. And I think, you know, I love having experts on the show, but I also love having fairly new investors on the show because a lot of us, I think, can relate maybe a little bit better to some of the newer investors. So how long have you been in real estate investing?
Where do I start? So it's funny because I stumbled into real estate investing at an early age. I want to say I was maybe like 19 or 20 when I bought my first property. It was funny because I just finished college and I got my first career job and I was making probably too much money than the government wanted me to make living out of my parents' garage type of thing. So oddly enough, I figured getting a property would be a good idea because one, I could use it as a business expense for my taxes and it'll just kind of get my feet wet and get something under my belt type of thing. And I bought my first property, I want to say between possibly 2008, 2009 when the market has just kind of been down and out type of thing.
Right.
And I picked up a single family home, which was really cheap at the time. And I was like, hey, this is going great. And I started investing that way. But essentially down the road, it just became this thing where landlording was just not for me because I wasn't doing it right. And then I gave up on that and started flipping houses for a little bit and made some cash out of that. But I figured I need to do something better for my life. And lo and behold, a few years later, and now I'm a bona fide real estate investor.
That's great. That's great. So how many properties do you own now?
I'm running about four right now outside of flips and anything else that I've done. And I'm looking to get some more as the year closes.
Okay, great. We'll have to talk.
Yeah, definitely. I'll be giving you a call, my friend.
Good, good. Well, I'd love to unpack a couple of things you said there. You know, 2008, 2009, that was right around when I went through a foreclosure, you know, in Orlando. I actually owned a property and moved away. It was just a brutal time. And so I think when a lot of investors are listening for the first time, you know, they're thinking, well, can I really do this? You know, I ended up with a foreclosure. I couldn't get any kind of bank loans. I had a foreclosure. I had, you know, $50,000 to $60,000 in debt and turned everything around. So if I can do it, anyone can do it. But I think I was wondering if maybe you bought one of the properties that I had a foreclosure on in Orlando.
Hey, who knows? It's interesting, right? I mean, to your point of anybody can do it. I was just 19 at the time and didn't know any better. It was just something that I thought would be a good idea. And I jumped in because, hey, I needed to find a way to deduct some taxes because they were just hitting me way too hard at the time. And it was doing it out of my parents' garage. So, I mean, it's one of those things that anyone can do. It's just a matter of finding the knowledge out there, finding the right people to talk to and moving forward with that. Just don't get stuck in that phase of doing too much analysis. The whole thing around analysis paralysis, right?
Right.
So you look into it too much. You worry too much. You forget that there's a risk to it. And you forget to jump in. Fast forward 10 years later, your life just went by.
That's great. So let's unpack a few of the things you mentioned. You mentioned you were doing it to mitigate your overall taxes, which is a drum that I beat on a regular basis. But to hear it out of your mouth, I think our listeners would get a lot of, you know, get a lot of information from that. So when you were looking at your current financial situation, why did you think real estate and how did you think it would help you mitigate your taxes?
So we have a few friends in the family that do real estate, mostly from the agency side of the house where they're just kind of buy and sell and, you know, nothing from an investment perspective. And just talking to those people, they said a few things that just kind of struck a chord with me. And additionally, is that some of them did own properties, and just overall in properties, you could treat it like a business, like a rental business, and you could use that to claim expenses. For example, let's say you want to fix up a property, you want to put up a fence or something like that. One, it increases the property value, and two, you can use it to kind of deduct some expenses because you're treating it like a business. So that was kind of the thing that kind of lit a light bulb in my head, and I was like, wait a minute, I can do this. And then the next thing after that was just kind of saving a down payment and going for a pretty much a conventional loan at the time. I had good credit, so it worked out for me, and I jumped in.
That's great. That's great. So how did that end up for you with taxes?
It went really well. Again, you know, it's one of those things that you don't know what you don't know until you're in it. You can plan all you want, but until you're facing it day to day, you won't really know. I think it was in your interview with Brandon Turner last week when he mentioned that you kind of have to treat it like fog, where every 10 steps, you see an extra 10 steps. Until then, you won't know anymore.
Right.
So it was like that for me too, right? I jumped in and I was like, well, I don't really know how to start fixing a house and what I can claim from a tax benefit on a house. But then again, just started seeing more people, networking. This is one of those good things about this community, right? That the more that you talk to people, the more you tell them what you do, people are willing to help. And just one thing led to another. And I figured that I could claim things like fixing an AC, fixing floors, you know, foundations, painting a house, putting up a fence. And eventually those things just did a number on my taxes, and it helped a ton.
Yeah, it certainly did. Like I had to say, we went from paying a lot in taxes to having rental real estate, which basically mitigates, you know, a huge amount of our taxes. So for people thinking about getting into it, taxes is a huge benefit of rental real estate. I'm curious, in Orlando and just in Florida in general, because obviously as you travel around different parts of the country, you have obviously different things that you deal with from when you're rehabbing properties, or when, you know, when you're buying and holding. I know in Florida, for instance, I have a lot of friends and investors who live in Florida. And one of the things that you deal with down there, obviously, storms and hurricanes and things. So frame homes, not as popular. If you've got frame, you know, wooden homes, not as popular. If you've got concrete block homes, can be more expensive. And so different things like that. So when you were diving into the rehab down there, did you have to kind of learn sort of on the job about, well, what's different about Florida than maybe Massachusetts?
Absolutely. And I think one of the things that helped me is I'm practically born and raised here in Orlando. So I just sort of knew the market like the back of my hand just by being in it for so long. So it was kind of easy for me to just say, wait a minute, I can look at this house, let's say house A, for example, which to your point could be a frame home, could be like something like a mobile home, one of those portable homes, and they don't look as sturdy, they don't look as good. And then turn around and look at something like a concrete home and one that looks very sturdy and very well made, and just knowing right out the gate, this is better for my market. But a lot of that came from just being in the market. I think as part of the work that I'm doing with you, actually, now that we've kind of been working together as investors and partners on this, is understanding the market outside of my state. And that's a lot trickier.
Right, right. Yeah, and having an appreciation for instance, you know, the markets that I love. It's like, you know, I'm in the Midwest, right? And so certain cities have, you know, require flood insurance, and then other cities don't because they're not near a navigable waterway, or have to deal with, I don't know, tornadoes, or, you know, it's like you go out to California, you have to deal with higher property taxes and mudslides. And God knows, there's something, it seems like, all over the place, right?
Yeah, definitely. And I would say too, you know, like you mentioned earlier, right? If you know where your market, it's prone to hurricanes or floods and stuff like that, then obviously your insurance is going to know that as well. So when you call them, they're going to make it very, very known that they want that on their properties. So right. That helps too, right? Just kind of be out there and getting that information.
So when you first got this property in Orlando, you lived there, it was in your own backyard. So that was sort of the natural thing. Obviously you've progressed and you've purchased properties with us, and you've come outside of your comfort zone. And you mentioned something in the very beginning where, you know, you knew that landlording wasn't for you, and you said you weren't good at it, I think is how you described it. What did you mean by that?
All right. So I think everybody has heard of the real estate horror stories, and mine is no different. I was really young. I was 19, 20 at the time. Renting was great. It was just one of those things where I was making profit on it. It was doing great, but because I was using a conventional loan, I had a mortgage on it. So there was this pressure on my head that I have to pay an extra $800, $900 bucks a month on this property that maybe I don't have through my regular job. So what if I can't rent that out? What do I do then, right? So immediately you start freaking out. You don't know what's going to happen. Life just gets a little bit more stressful. So I created this dependency on that money. Therefore, I was renting to anyone and everyone. Mm-hmm. In addition to that, I needed them to stay in that house. So I gave them my personal phone number, and I was 24/7 repairman.
Wow.
It was just not good. Yeah. That's not how you do it. You know, it's one of those things that if you're going to go into business, you should run it like a business. And I learned that the hard way.
Yeah, that's great. That's a great point. I think, and for most people, they start that way. And I call it early on here on the podcast, I call it the, you know, the lure of the first property syndrome. You think with that first property, oh, we can do it. And then it, you know, ends up being maybe you get lucky, right? You're renting to a friend. So it seems easy, but then it's that lure, the allure of it, right? Like, oh, we did it on that first one. We could surely do it on the second one. Just to save a little bit of money, not have the proper property management team doing a full vetting, right? You know, you want someone who's going to do a full background check, criminal background check. You're going to call up previous landlords. You're going to, you know, confirm that they pay on time, that they don't have evictions on their record, because we won't rent to those people. Like, you want a high class of tenant in your property. So for you, you were really sort of mentally depending on that income. So were you, do you think you were like lowering your qualifications?
Yeah, honestly, I was just, if you have the money and you can prove that you've been working for 3 months, it's yours. Take it.
Right.
It was bad. It was bad. And it wasn't a thing where I had bad tenants. I mean, I want to say that I have a good judge of character, and I did interview these people, and we had a legal real estate contract that was binding and the whole nine. So from a legal perspective, I was well protected, just because I was savvy enough to kind of read up on how to do it. The hard part became my management part. I'm not a property manager. And little did I know that there was even a career called property manager, and there's a team of people who handle this for me. If I would have known that back then, I would have been possibly 100% willing to employ them. But it wasn't a thing that I knew. I was just jumping into it. And I figured, to your point, right, I can do it by myself. I can do for this first one and the second one and the third one. So essentially, I was getting calls at 3 a.m. or so to go repair a leaky toilet or go fix something in the house. And obviously, I was going to do it because I needed them to pay my rent. I needed to be able to afford that mortgage. So I would wake up 3 a.m. and go over there and fix a toilet. And again, that's just not how you want to run a business. So it was impacting my personal life, my professional life, and it became more than I could handle, which is why I kind of gave up on real estate investing early on and landlording in general.
And I think you bring up a great point, which is it was starting to affect your personal life. And so often when I'm talking to investors on the phone, one of the things that they'll sort of ask me, you know, is this a realistic goal? Is this something that I can do? I'm like, you know, I talk to them about real estate. They'll tell me they want to do this, they want to do that. Is that realistic? And I say to them, my answer is, well, really start with the lifestyle you want. You know, think about the lifestyle you want first, and then reverse engineer it from there. If you're okay with getting calls at 3 a.m. for a leaky toilet, and that's totally fine and part of your lifestyle, then great. If it's not, then you probably need to think of an alternative strategy, which may be, you know, hiring a property management team that's going to take care of everything for you. So you're just getting rent checks and you don't ever get a phone call, and you're building in that 10% a month for property management into your overall return on investment numbers.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think at this point, moving forward, pretty much 80 to 90% of my properties will go through a property management company.
Yeah, that's great. So next steps, you then, you know, Orlando, did you still have that house, or did you end up moving into a property management team? How did you end up doing that?
So I ended up, oddly enough, right, my brother went through the same kind of situation that you did, right? Foreclosure, short sale. They ended up kind of leaving their property to the dust. So they needed a place to stay. I was just finishing up a lease that I had on that property. So I figured, hey guys, why don't you stay here and just make sure that you give me almost the bare minimum and some extra to cover maintenance and expenses. And they did. So there's a rule in any book that you're going to read about real estate investing that says, don't rent to your family. Mm-hmm. I learned that lesson real quick too.
Wow.
They were great, but it's one of those things where they probably stayed there longer than I could have made profit on. And things just kind of didn't really work out the way that they should have. I mean, kudos to them for helping me and me for helping them. But it's one of those things that if I would have been a little bit smarter and treated like a business yet again, I would have come up with a lot more income and just make sure that property was on point. Whereas I didn't do that. And then by the time they left, it was a situation where they got a career opportunity and they had to move immediately. So obviously their family, they're not going to give me a certain number of days that they would as if they had a regular lease. They're not going to break lease or anything like that. So they pretty much just up and left. And then I was left with a property within 2 or 3 weeks that I had to go once again, pay a mortgage on, go fix, go try to rent, go do all these things. And essentially, I just went ahead and looked at the market. The market was fairly high at that point. I almost doubled my return on that one. So I figured, hey, you know what? Let me go ahead and fix this up and start flipping. And then I got into the flipping business.
Well, you've done a lot. So how did that end up for you?
It actually worked out very well. That was a fairly good flip for us. Again, we almost made double what we got that investment for. And from there, just spawned a whole new avenues of opportunity for me where I'm now looking at properties and saying, wait a minute, this could give me that return. I could get this cash to then go pursue more buy and hold deals, more investments. And now I kind of sort of do both, right? I look at flips for being flips, and those are great. But I also look at buy and hold investments to build that lifetime wealth to reach that freedom number that you and I talked about.
Right, right. Well, that's so great. What is your freedom number?
So it's funny because if I combine the salaries of my household, we're looking at possibly 15 to 20 properties, which would put us around the range of 100K plus. And when you start thinking about it that way, it makes it very attainable. Mm-hmm. Versus if you look at me saying something like, I want to be a millionaire by age 30, it's such a lofty goal. The chances are you're never going to even reach it because you're just going to get blocked. Mentally, it's really hard to process that. But once we started working with you and partnering with the whole freedom number idea and understanding that we can accomplish that little by little, it became extremely clear for us what the path forward was. Because we were looking at real estate investing as something we can do on the side, just something that we can enjoy. And hey, maybe we can make some extra money here and there without really realizing that if we were aggressive about it, we could actually make a life out of this. We could turn it into more profitable than our entire business and professions combined. So it became a no-brainer for us immediately.
That's great. So I think you've acquired two properties. I think the two that we did with you, rehabbed and up and running and rented. I think one was a two bedroom, one was like a four or five bedroom.
Correct.
And so to come outside of your comfort zone and just to kind of take action, that's a pretty big moment for you to like turn the keys over, basically. Like, okay, we've done it. I'm happy to kind of step back now. It was affecting my social life and I want to take the next steps here. What was that like for you? What kind of conversations were you having in your family about that?
I think the hardest part with anything is understanding that there's a risk on both ends, right? There's a risk on the end that you can probably look at it and never take action. That in itself is a risk because if you do take action, you can change your life. And there's also the risk that if you do take action to change your life, an investment is an investment and there's a chance that it could go turn into a positive investment or it can turn into a negative investment. Some of those things you can't control. What you can do is make sure you do your research, make sure that your numbers are looking good because at the end of the day, numbers don't lie. So I think part of what we did is we understood what flipping was like. We understood what renting was like. We understood what landlording was like. And just about every single one of those cost us problems. So we got on the phone with you. We pretty much interviewed each other, right? You interviewed us, we interviewed you, see what you were about, how you would do it, how you go about it. And then it just became kind of a working relationship. And that helped alleviate the process a lot because we were always in communication. We were always talking about what the next steps would be and how we could approach it. And I think we're probably more involved than some of your other investors, but it's part of that peace of mind that if you want to be as involved as you want to be, you can do that with somebody like you and your team. And it's hard for us because obviously we've always played locally. This is the first time that we're making moves outside of our state. So we have to look at things like market analysis, you know, understanding what that market is like for other people. We've actually become part of the community of Bigger Pockets. And we talk to people out there in Indianapolis and Philadelphia and these places that you kind of purchase property in. And we get with them. We talk to them and just make friends. So it's easier to kind of build your network. Mm-hmm. And if you have a good network that can kind of educate you on what you're about to do, it makes it a lot better.
That's great. And really, I think you hit on a really something I haven't thought about recently, but the idea of understanding what a market is like for the people in that market, right? Orlando is a totally different market than the Midwest. It's a different area altogether. There's different things to consider. There's different laws. There's no state income tax. So there's a whole, there's a lot of different things to consider, from state to state. And when you're in the Midwest, there are things to consider. There are, obviously things to consider when it comes to property taxes, different school districts, different neighborhoods, access to public transportation that you might not have in Orlando that you might have in certain cities in the Midwest. And that's why people would want to live near public transportation. And so there's a lot of different things to understand and consider when you're making that move. But the point is that you did, and you did take action. And what, you know, what's next for you guys now that you've taken that action, you are looking to acquire more properties and take next steps. How are you doing that with the financing? Are you put things in place to sort of acquire financing? Or are you doing this with cash? What's your strategy there?
Sure. So prior to us kind of jumping with you, actually, even when we jumped with you, all of our deals have been kind of self-funded and in cash. We just had enough money through time to just kind of play with it, right? Whether it's savings or flipping or whatever it's been, we've had enough where we can put cash forward. Now that I'm older and kind of realizing that I do want to build that wealth for my family, I want to go ahead and take our business and just be more aggressive. So we are exploring options for hard money lenders, private lenders, and even if it has to be a thing where we do a home equity, we can do that too. Or even if it's something where we borrow funds from our family members or go get another conventional loan or refinance, we can do all those things. And for the people that don't know what hard money lenders are or private lenders, essentially a hard money lender is a company that focuses their practice on just making sure that they can provide cash funds, and cash isn't like you get it in 2 hours, right? Cash may come in a few days, but cash funds to investors just like you and I. And then usually they carry a higher rate of return. But essentially what you can do is you can either flip a property or figure out where you can from your rental incomes or something like that and kind of supplement that cash that you have to pay out. And a private lender could be someone like a neighbor that just happens to have a lot of money that they don't put to use, and you can offer them a higher return of investment if they invest in you. So those are options that we're exploring. We've also kind of linked up with a lot of people on Bigger Pockets, and we've made a lot of connections there. As a matter of fact, you know, through that, we're also trying to build our own team over in Texas because I have my brother out there. So he might be able to help us out in the flipping and the renting and do all those things. So it's a matter of your network continues to grow and your options grow with it. So funding becomes a lot easier after that.
That's great. And, there are a lot of people that I talk to who literally have no money, zero. Like, can I get started? Can I take action in rental real estate? I know this is something that I want to do, but I don't have any cash on hand. It might be a little bit harder, or it might seem more daunting, but it doesn't really have to be any more daunting. It really is just making those connections and talking to the right people in the private and in the hard money world, right?
Yeah, absolutely. It's harder than it sounds, right? I mean, you think about it, oh, I just got to reach out to them, right? But obviously, if you're savvy enough to put together a smart little portfolio, which is something that we've done here, I mean, from a professional career, analysis is part of what I do. So it's easy for me to kind of get caught up in the analysis paralysis type of thing. But if you start thinking about it from an investor perspective, if you were to invest in someone, what would you want to see? First off, you want to see that you can be confident in that person. So how do you build confidence in somebody that's going to invest in you? One of those things that you can do is just make sure that you have a good track record. So for example, for the deals that we've done, we capture all of that. What our investment was, what our return was, essentially what happened, whether we flipped it, we rented, we sold it, whatever that may be. And we kind of built ourselves a little rap sheet that we can now socialize to other investors, and it makes the whole process a lot easier.
That's great. That's great. So I always love to ask this question because I think it's helpful to a lot of our listeners. If you're thinking about, if our listeners are thinking about taking action, get started with real estate for the first time, what advice would you give them if they were about to dive in? They're getting past that analysis paralysis phase and they're about to start.
I think pretty much every single one of your guests has said it, right? Just make sure that you have done your research. Without research, you won't succeed. It's one of those things where you have to plan, but you also have to be careful of how much you plan, because you can plan to 1,000%, but really all you may have needed was 100%. And then once you get to 1,000%, you're so deep into it that you just don't take action. So you're going to get those kind of butterflies in your gut that probably say, you know what, you may not want to do this, but you're also going to get the same butterflies that do tell you, I should try this. And if you're feeling that way, you should just take a shot. Just make sure that you read up on your books. Make sure you have a lot of information out there that's on the internet. Just read up on it. If you're not a part of Bigger Pockets, check them out. I mean, they've helped me a lot. Work with other mentors or people that can help you, like yourself, Clayton. I mean, you've been a great help to us. We hear every single one of your podcasts. We hear Natalie. We read the books that you guys tell us to read. And it's just made our family that much smarter. So just make sure you get that help from other people. And don't be afraid to take a chance, because once you do take a chance, you're just going to open up your eyes to so many new things.
I love it. I love it. Well, thank you so much, Alvin. It's been a real treat having you here on the podcast, and look forward to working with you for many years to come and helping you get to that freedom number.
Likewise, my friend. Thank you for having me, and say hi to the family for us.
I will indeed. I will indeed. That is Alvin, an investor who just started a few short years ago picking up his first few properties. And you can hear certainly all the things he's already laid out, taking things to the next level. I couldn't be prouder. That's fantastic. And thanks to all of you for listening to today's show. If you want to go back and check out some of the previous episodes that we talked about here on the show, specifically Alvin and I were talking about finding your freedom number. So heading back and actually going through step by step by step in that PDF and sort of walking through exactly how to do that, you can, of course, download that for free. It's just at morrisinvest.com/freedom. Sit down with your husband, your wife, and go through that and figure out your monthly expenses and how many rental properties it would take you to achieve financial freedom. And thanks so much for pushing us up to the top of the iTunes charts. We really appreciate it. And thanks to Apple, by the way, for featuring us on the front page of iTunes. Thanks to all of you and who have subscribed, and we will see you back here. We publish every Monday, Wednesday, and Thursday here on the show. Thanks, everyone. We'll see you next time on Investing with Real Estate. Much love to you all.
Some crimes are never forgotten. Others are lost to history. Those are the ones we focus on in Crimes of the Centuries, a history meets true crime podcast revisiting murders, trials, and frauds that once dominated headlines. I'm Amber Hunt, your host and a Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist. If you like true crime that feels both cinematic and historical, find Crimes of the Centuries wherever you get your podcasts.